settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
I'm Sylvie Avery, and welcome to Spirit's Work, the show that's designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death, and life in other dimensions. And this week we'll be discussing energy again, and this is part three, so you're not listening to a repeat. And if you'd like to join us, the phone lines will be open, and the number to call is 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's only a quick call. It won't cost you too much. And it's 001-530-876-3222.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work, on the wonderful and ever-present bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. PST and every Thursday at 1 p.m. PST, we also have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistsfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, book an Akashic reading, or any of the other services we have to offer, please do go and visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, and also live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. Ugh. Right, finally got it out. I'm a deep trance medium anyway, and as usual, I'm going to be channeling our resident spirit expert, Gregory Hay, from the White Cloud Group, and he'll be taking center stage on the show. I've been working in this way with Gregory for many years now, about 14 or so, I think, and Spirit Guide Gregory will borrow my body so he can speak to you, and because it is deep trance, I won't be aware of anything that happens. So if you have a question relating to our subject, please, and it's Gregory you'll be talking to, do join in. You can join in on the phone, as Sylvie said. I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie now before I make any more, before my mouth completely takes over with me and I just talk a load of rubbish.
Okay.
Okay, then bye.
I'm not going to make any excuses for you this week.
No, don't.
Gregory is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group, who consists of scientific minds of all description, along with ordinary people who have a valuable input to make. They're an educational team and have come to give us access to information that we need to know in order that we may move towards a more harmonious and peaceful way of life, to understand the nature of our existence and hope save our world from the negative spiral we seem to be caught in. It's a huge event in the spirit world when we do this kind of communication. It's not only us on Earth who will be listening, but also thousands of spirit beings in the spirit world who are also listening and watching intently the experts in the team working in this way. There are those who have had a physical life on Earth and also those who would like to in the future, which is why as the mediums for the group, our aim is to offer positive input into exactly why we are here and how we can, with a concerted effort from everybody, restore the balance and the well-being of the planet. And as we said, if you want to know more about us, our website is spirit-teaching.com. Hello, Gregory. Are you here?
Hello, my dear friend. With love and life. Blessings be upon your pathway,
friend. Thank you. Oh, before we start, I'd just like to say that we're in Portland this Saturday at Healing Waters, 10 to 4 p.m. for a trance and altered states of consciousness workshop. So go onto our site and find out more about that if you are interested. So, sorry about that, Gregory.
No, it's quite all right.
Rick. Just in case we run out of time at the end.
Sometimes yes, of course.
It's a bit quick. The
I
exit.
Understand. Yes. A bit hasty.
Yes, so we're going to be talking about energy again today.
Yes.
What areas in mind did you want to start off with this week?
Well, we thought that many of the situations and conditions in physical life are perhaps, shall we say, a little fraught in that, well, how is it that a person from our side of life can make themselves manifest, but not just in a violent way, but actually have pressure upon you so that perhaps it may be that it's a guide who comes close. Well, how can their energy actually transfer to you so that you can feel it?
Absolutely, that sounds fascinating.
After all, friend, the whole condition of the spirit world surely is that it's of a nature which is not material. So if it is not material, what is the energy? How can it possibly be that an energy of anything can exist as non-physical, but also, of course, yes, I know that you can relate to all of the gadgets and that kind of thing that you cannot see, and yet that has energy. But what I'm saying is that there is even, of course, a state of which you, if you inhale carbon, it's not something that you can taste or see or feel or sense. Carbon dioxide would be something that is, shall we say, almost completely inert. It's something which it does not have taste or flame or does not have energy of itself, and yet it can come very close to you and engulf you, and you wouldn't even know it. So the situation and the condition of those in the spirit world has to be that, well, what of their energy? How is energy possibly even manifested in a non-physical form? Because usually, in your realm of thinking, energy has to become from something else, as human physical beings, as we've said in previous episodes of this discussion, that you as an energy being needs to consume energy in order to emit energy. Otherwise, of course, a human being would last but perhaps 30 or maybe 35 days without any other energy input coming into them. So, but of course, that is on a physical level. In the spirit world, the energy, in a sense, is something which is creative continuously. I suppose that's part of the problem human beings have, in that they regard the afterlife, perhaps, or where could your consciousness go? If it doesn't have a vehicle of expression, how can your consciousness even express?
Absolutely.
If you don't have a physical vehicle.
Well,
I know that these are
all time,
many, many questions and situations and scenarios which perhaps then begin to trouble the mind in as much as human beings have great difficulty in consuming the thought and then actually being able to evolve the thought into some sort of conscious understanding. So, to begin with then, the situation, first of all, is to do with the consciousness layering and what that actually is, how it survives, of course, is something that we have talked about a great many times. And it actually survives that instead of you relying upon the cortex of the brain and the actual individual cells and neurons to store electrical pulses of memory, much as similar, I suppose, as you could say that a computer stores pulses of nanoparticles that actually contain the elements of made up individually that come together that actually create pictures and scenarios of your intention, of your conscious state. But that, of course, is a physical thing. Even a nanoparticle is a physical object. Yet in the spirit world, that consciousness thought and setting actually turns itself into a sort of a sub-clime, if you like, of energy. And this is created because the consciousness, together with the spirit, are motivated into this ultra ether dimension, if you like. So what actually happens to the nanoparticle of your thought? How is this thing split up into ether world particles of thought, which are then completely reactive? The situation becomes clear when you begin to understand aspects of your own thoughts and how thoughts are grown or being born. They are not necessarily born throughout the magic of physical relation. They are born through the mystical apparatus, which comes very often from the spirit world or is derived from your own spirit. This is a part of the situation that perhaps Buddhists have such a hard time with, because their belief is generally that the spirit before physical birth does not exist or cannot be interreactive. But what I'm suggesting here is that in actual fact, the nanoparticle of spirit and that aspect of the etheric dimension, which is energy, which is of course relating to that part of God as your spirit is relating to that part of God, which is, it means to say that in this conception and in this ability, the nanoparticles of etheric dimension, which exist as a part of God, is just really an exchange of energy, a different interrelationship with that sublime thought. So what you have is an energy particle which is of the sublime truth of God, if you'd like, the energy of the universe. And as that transmits and creates and moves together with other energy particles of thought from the same sublime richness of truth, then this is something which becomes accumulated and accumulated together to actually become more synchronized in its creative state, because God, in all essence, is creative. It's not, I understand that human beings have the concept of creation being something of creation, therefore destruction. Destruction has to come to bring about creation, as is the point and pathway of the universal precept of one and one, that is, the message and the method of looking at the length of something in physical, the physical focal point, if you like. So if you actually have the nanoparticle which exists, then there must have been some destructive force which actually existed before the nanoparticle in order to even make a nanoparticle. This is part of the problem that human physical beings have with the relationships of thought, because they can only think in the terms of rationale of the statement of physical or biological progress, which allows thought to occur. However, this is not something wholly derived, as I have said so often times, with the situation of nanoparticles actually being created by the physical object. You have a situation in the spirit world which exists as part of God, as being there being etheric nanoparticles which actually exist. And it just in the same way as you have nanotesla particles of magnetism, and the way that that is defined, it's not something that you can see, yet you know that the nanotesla particle actually exists as a form of strength, and that however many bytes of nanotesla particle that exist within a magnetic form of energy surge or pulling or whatever that energy, however that energy happens to modulate and exude its energy force, that is something of a constant. It's not something which then gives out over necessarily a period of time, but that is something which is constantly recreating itself, as Tesla, of course, found out. So the situation is that you may then find that within the nanotesla particle, that even that has a strength which is emitting and has a point of failure, whereby the nanotesla particle no longer exudes energy or no longer pulls toward it, attracts energy, other situations, other organisms or material toward it. This, then, is the problem with the focal length of physical human thought and the problems that surround that. When you are looking in the ether world to try to move your mind around the same situation, that is, you have an energy which doesn't exist on the physical plane, except when it is interactive. So, what you have, in fact, is that all of these etheric nanoparticles are moving around in the ether world. And they themselves are a part of this same symbiotic nature of the biological world. It's just that it's in a different dimension, away from your concept of reality. If you were immersed in the magnetic world of nano-Tesla particles that, as has been described by Tesla in his Voyage of Reasoning, then you would actually see that they actually air in various forms of focal length, that they too have a specific guide and a specific occasion where they make themselves more energetic, quite simply because of the presence of other nanotesla particles. The situation then is not reversed, but merely repeated in a different dimension in the ether world. Because actually, my dear friends, what you have then is you have spirit beings who have attracted not just to their own thought and reason and their own illumination of their beauty of life, because they are part of that which is God, but also, of course, this is something which is accentuated by their unconscious or subconscious state of the physical life that they had had. And that, instead of being in the form of nanoparticles of the subprime of the physical brain, that what you actually have then is instead it inverts to a nanoparticle of the etheric world, because it is just a negative image of its previous response. So instead of it being a physical state where you have actual measurement of it in a physical way, its length or breadth or whatever, you actually have a nano-response of how it exists in the etheric world. And in that respect, you may actually measure from a physical point of view, a physical being, you can measure across a spirit dimension and say, oh yes, this spirit is this wide. What has this on earth got to do with anything to do with the religious, the reason of reality of physical form? Well, quite simply, friend, when you are actually bringing about this imagery of the way in which the nanoparticle works, and how a spirit form could actually be resolved in any condition in your mind, you actually have to accept that there is a measurement whereby a spirit form at one point begins and then it ends. And this is because the nanoparticles of the etheric realm have come together to present it. And it's by its own volition, its own creative force, that it allows this presence to be. There, my dear Ben.
Well, thank you, Gregory.
Well, I would just like to thank Mr. Nikolai Tesla for that invocation, for that explanation of how it is.
But he's here now.
Well,
thank you to him too. And if anybody would like to join us with a question relating to our subject, then the phone lines are open and we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is toll-free in the U.S., 877-876-5227. Canada is 888-815-9756. International callers, it's not toll-free, as the number is 001-530-876-3222, and you will be talking, directing your question to Gregory Hay, but as we say, Nikolai Tesla is here as well. If there's any geeky people out there, we welcome your calls, or any calls, as long as it's about the subject. Or relative to the subject of energy, anyway, in particular.
Absolutely.
So how does this you know, we have aura photographs and that sort of thing. So how is it, can you explain a little about how that works then?
Yes, absolutely so. We are reminded, my dear friend, about the condition of how it is that you could even have the condition of a molecular structure which actually exists in its present form in the physical voyage, and yet how it actually could exist as a colorational form in the spirit world or be amplified in the physical reality. If you would wish, I will stop.
Okay, yes. Hello, caller.
Hello there, Sylvie.
Oh, hi. Hi. Is that Bobby? Not Bobby. Who's this?
Brian.
Brian. Hello, Brian. I'm sorry. I've got all these different names down here. You actually sound like about three other people that call in. Doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. So, yes. And actually, with the same deep depth of spirituality and occasion of your auric vibration,
absolutely,
friend.
Yeah. It's incredible. Anyway, lovely to take your call, Brian.
Yes, hello, Gregory. How are you, dear friend?
Hello, I am so well, thank you. Thank you so much for asking.
Yes, I always want to ask how the spirit world's doing.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, we are doing very well, and your good self, I trust, too.
Yes, my question is dealing with energy.
Yes.
And I was wanting to know, if, say that I go out in my backyard and I sit down and I meditate and I direct my consciousness toward the stars.
Yes.
Is it possible to link up with my galactic heritage, the energy?
It is possible, my dear friend, that you can do that and you don't actually have to sit in your garden to do that. It is possible that you can do that merely from sitting in any room in your house. You can do that too, of course, if you're sitting under a tree.
Is it just the intent on what I want exactly to connect with them more on a etheric level, but also maybe on a physical level?
Well, my dear friend, I would suggest to you that may well be a suggestion within your mind, within your heart. However, I would suggest that the thing to do is to just have the will to connect, not to have preambles about the situation, because if you do that, you could almost be insightful of your own mind.
Yeah.
And your own situation of how you are creating the thought. Let me make this plain, friend. And I said purposefully your own mind, because this is something which is personable to you. So it means to say that you are the being, the archetype within the control of mind at that sublime moment. What you really need to do, however, is in making this contact, bringing it into perfection, is to lose the subject of mind, your own mind, so that you are able to actually transcend the thoughts and feelings that you already hold, which are apparent in your suggestion. That is, that you require those beings in the ether world or in your reality, but in some other location, to actually make themselves physically manifest to you. Now, what I'm suggesting to you, friend, is by that very intonation, by your intention, you are creating a precursor to that connection. So what you are doing, in fact, is you are bringing forward already the imagery of the possibility of that physical state. However, what I'm suggesting also is that this actual part of the intonation means that although you may well make the connection on an etheric level, the situation may become that their physical presence appears to be in your presence, yet is actually modified by your precursor agreement, by your intonation. I hope you follow me, friend. So that what I'm saying is that because of the fact that you have your thought already in there, that you are possibly going to engineer it and make it, rather than it being a free will condition from the other party. So what you really need to have is then to actually suppress the already intentioned thought that you have toward this being. What you really need to do is to step aside from that thought and just say, I would like to make contact. Thank you.
And your invocation of protection and asking.
Yes, so not actually to have a precursor of physical dimension. Because in that way, friend, when it comes to you, or if it should come to you, it will be something outside of your mind-thought reparation that you have already created in your preamble. So it means to say then, it will be further evidence for you and not something projected by your mysterious mind.
The father fragment of the mind, yes.
Yes, because you don't want that to happen. You want something to be a reasonable, rational approach. Something which is going to then give you the experience that you desire, perhaps, or to give you the evidence that you seek. If it's something to do with the conjuring of the mind, that's not evidence at all.
No, there's a deep craving within my heart and soul to connect with that which I remember in past lifetimes.
I understand.
And we're talking about other dimensions. Here, aren't we?
Well, other dimensions, or you are discussing here about relationships you have had to do with other sub-creative conditions of your living memory.
Yes.
And what you are doing in this respect, my friend, in realigning yourself with this memory, is because you wish to reflect upon certain specific experiences of this enjoyment, of this tryst with various other peoples, or whatever it was, however it became known to you in the context of your illuminations during your dream state, or during your meditational sequences, or something like that. So what actually, friend, I am suggesting to you is that if you actually put upon it a physical connotation, then you, in a sense, are a being running out of patience. Because what you're doing is you are then trying to manipulate the situation to being something of your, to quell your angst, if you like, rather than allowing yourself to actually overcome the problem of your prejudiced mind and rather allow the mind to just sequest, to just move away, so that those who wish to possibly communicate with you from this other world experience that you had had, and I say other world, even though it may well have been physical in the present physical dimension, it's still otherworldly to your present concept of mind. So you then realize that rather than manipulating your mind to bring about this acceptance and hopefully channeling this energy from this other sublime source, what you really need to do is to be able to encourage it into your world in a more minimalist approach, so that you are not in fact creating it through the aspect of mind ology, but what you are really doing is allowing them to actually present themselves so that you don't actually have a hand in it. But I do understand the concept, my friend, and the problem for you really is in you having to be patient.
Yes, that's true.
At the end of the day, friend, that is what really it's about. So I would suggest to you, friend, that you don't include that in your invocation, that you wish or desire their physical presence. They already know that.
I was wondering if they knew about me.
Yes. So all you need to do, my friend, is just be and allow this situation to unfold before you and within your life.
So just send love. and whatever happens.
Absolutely. Absolutely yeah. So, my friend. If you try to engineer it and be manifesting in your mind, you'll go up a crazy man's path, friend.
Yeah, I can see that. Yes,
yes. And I don't advise it at all. There are many people out in your physical world who have done that, tried that, and have become quite crazed by it, and in fact continue to regurgitate the same thing again and again, because their craving is never sated. What I have to say to you, friend, is that you need to do it in this other way that I am suggesting, to just allow it to happen. It may take several years, friend. Learn patience. That's something that you really need to learn, is absolute patience, because then you will not interject your own mind consciousness or your creative aspect of mind consciousness into the journey. You need to be a receiver, not someone who constantly puts out, but someone who actually receives, to have clear evidence of that journey.
I see. That makes a lot more sense.
So pleased, my friend.
Okay.
It's something I'm realizing with a lot of patience, even on my side of life. But I thank you so much, Gregory.
Absolutely so, my dear friend. God bless upon your journey. Safe and sweet dreams.
Thank you.
Thanks,
so much.
Brian.
Thank you, Sylvie.
Bye-bye.
Okay, if anybody else would like to join us with a question related to our subject of energy and ask Gregory anything you like about it, really, as long as it's associated to the topic today. Our phone lines are open and we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is in the US. It's toll free, and in the US it's 877-876-5227. Canada 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll free, I'm afraid, but it's 001-530-876-3222. Okay. So, yes, we started to talk about aura photography and
yes.
And measuring energy in that way.
Yes. Well, of course, as I say, that really is the end result of what it is, how it is that your energy displays itself. I'm not saying that necessarily it is all to do specifically with your aura, because, of course, some of it will have conditions emanating from temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, a physical state,
mm-hmm.
and is the response of molecular, at a molecular level, of the energy that you emit as a physical being and as a spirit being having a physical experience. So, in actual fact, what is happening within the aura camera is that it is picking up radiated signals and images of the different... Yes, the different pathway of how you actually look at color, the different reflective pathway of each color.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something then which actually comes to your consciousness and that actually reflects. So let us say you have meditated, and what your aura reveals to itself within this meditation is that you are looking succinctly at a specific contour of the energy which is being emitted by your meditation state. For example, friend, if you have been a person in deep meditation, your auric field will possibly extend some 15 or even 20 feet
mm-hmm.
away from you. And this is not unusual. The colors that actually appear to materialize in an auric camera photograph are really the issues of how well your aura feels. So how can that possibly be transmuted into a color in the physical world?
Exactly.
Because it's not something that you can actually see, but of course it's something that you can feel if you are of the sensitivity to feel it. And you don't need that person to have meditated in order to feel that expression. That, of course, is how it is that physical beings, with their sensitivity, translate that material energy of what is being emitted by the physical soul, if you like, because of your emotional content and your emotional expression, which which is all a part of your physical dynamism and also the interrelationship between your physical state and your spirit. So what's actually being emitted is part to do with your spirit and how it relates to you, and also, of course, to do with your emotional tight field. So the nanoparticles which come to make up the very state of colorography, if you like, the calorific value of how you express yourself. So if you look upon the aura camera and you see pink, you automatically think, ah, pink, that's healing, that's to do with this, to do with that. That's a spiritual color, it's this, it's that. Various explanations for it. But also, how does that actually appear in the ether world? Particularly if the ether world is non-physical, therefore how can color particles even exist?
Well, yes, but I mean, even in, I mean, you can say that somebody's got a beautiful blue aura around them,
yes,
or whatever, so you obviously see that.
Oh, of
and
course, yes.
So does that always correlate with, I know you're not, you've not around
with
aura.
With the color that you see, or that the aura camera actually picks up? Is it an immediate transition, or does it mean to say that actually what the aura camera is picking up is a dilution, or is an exchange? Perhaps it may be that the color that it's picking up is completely reversed to what it actually displays, that where there is red, it's actually some other color, you see? Perhaps a different color or opposite to it in its own spectrum.
But we can still read those colors accurately, though, can't we?
Yes,
in our own way.
Yes, of course. But that is because that is the way that your sensitivity interprets it through your spirit, because it's relating to it. But what I'm saying is, though, that the situation, the transition, is still defined by the focal length of the color and how that color interacts with the physical world, purely and simply because of the organic presence of light. If you did have no light, which existed at all in the physical presence, how would that then become manifest? If you had no production of light of specific focal length, or that allowed the prismatic effect of light and its condition to actually become manifest, how could you possibly intonate that whatever color existed at all? That's the problem that physical people have with ether world dynamics, because they naturally assimilate that everything that exists in the physical world sublime is exactly the same as how it exists in the spirit world.
Well, we do our best with our,
it's
what
like
we've
taking
got
it as
to
a given,
work
isn't
with.
It?
Yes, well, we do our best because we are you know, somewhat hampered by our physical nature.
Of course, I understand that. So these are really expressions of questioning that really dutifully should come to the human being's mind as to, well, how can I actually equate with this if this is an aura camera as it is depicted, taking a picture of an aura, when you are not actually completely sure or aware that this is the natural color this aura progresses to have, quite simply because you are taking it upon yourself that this may be the color in question that you seek within, when you are applying your own sensitivity, your spirit sensitivity, to pick up the aura color of someone's physical state.
Well, I know that you can't will the color on an aura camera because everybody wants to everybody wants to have all these beautiful purples and blues and
and there you
delightful
get smudgy green or yellow.
Well,
and you think, oh, that doesn't look too good.
And they're bright red. And, and so I know you can't alter it in that respect.
No, quite so.
Unless I know you can meditate beforehand and that sort of thing, but so yes, to a certain extent, though, we are so, you know, and obviously with the technology that we've got, you know, I'm sure aura cameras in 20 years' time will be nothing like they are now.
Well, that is a possibility, of course. But given the fact that you have a specific situation, as I am saying, you are trusting that the condition of the focal length of light that exists in your condition of physical state, state reality means to say that, is it then a truth, a given, that this focal length of light emits exactly in exactly the same way? This, of course, is part of the problem that comes from radio or electron telescopes or something like that, because you then have the problem of how that color transmits of perhaps viewing a star or with the radiographic image of a star, and how those colors are then actually supported and brought about, I suppose, reflected upon in an Earth physical state. Because, of course, it, being that you are an Earth being, you have the problems of the chemical substances around you that you are actually a part of. It could be said that a galactic photograph from a radio telescope is something perhaps which actually reflects the value of light that is emitted at that particular place. Yet it is interpolated once it reaches the Earth, quite simply because it has to come through the Earth's physical atmosphere. And also because of the delicate mechanism which is employed to reconnect with it, to re-amplify it into a way that human beings can understand. So therefore, in fact, you could say that where an Earth magnetic energy specific to the actual basis of the alignment of the Earth is of a certain magnitude of nanotesla value, then you actually look and observe at an atom of the specific planetary object or star object that you are observing with your radio telescope, and what you're actually looking at is something that's not necessarily even accurate because of the bending of light, the fractionated light that the universe actually creates in this ambiguous situation of whether it is actually related in an accurate way. So it's part of the problem that human beings have when they're even looking at something as simple as their own aura sensitivity, because you are also taking into account the focal length between your eyesight and the visual aspect of what you see. I know full well that an orograph film, as it is laid out upon the paper, is of a certain specific density. It's ascribed in that way because of the specific focal length of color light value which is depicted in the photograph. But what you actually have, what you actually observe and look at, is something beyond that, because it's as though at times, as you observe the photograph, you see other things within it, as the layers appear to part. This is quite a strange anomaly, because what actually is laid should just be laid in one dimension, because obviously the film actually only depicts into one-dimensional state, or rather should I say two-dimensional states. It's actually observing the situation as a flat object that has both depth and width. But it's still a flat object. And yet, it actually appears that the more that you study an aura photograph, it actually brings together also the depth of field. This enables you to determine different aspects of the color's focal length to actually understand more about the aura intensity of the person, the victim, if you like, in this situation, of the person that you have actually taken the photograph of. So it means to say then that you have these different color layers which appear to be submerged almost on top of one another in certain places. You then have to decide for yourself how this focal length of color appreciation actually senses, alights your senses into your contact with your spirit to help you to determine how that relates to you and how that energy actually relates to you in a positive or a negative way.
I met a lovely lady yesterday who works with colour.
Yes.
And with people. And she was saying that she actually, she senses it. I think that's the most accurate
and tastes
measurement.
It as well.
And tastes it as well, yes. So yes. That was quite interesting as well. How does that work?
Yes, absolutely so. But that, you see, again, is to really to do with the correlation with her spirit working with her physical energy and her supreme sensitivity, which is working and engaging within these focal lengths. So actually what she is relating to is the focal length of well-being being emitted through the pores, through the skin, through the actual energy vibration of the physical biological system of physical form that she's seeing in front of her, and that's actually being emitted through the skin. And so her sensitivity is actually picking it up and creating a pathway of understanding for her to then make sense of it. The situation is, in fact, that the energy comes through from the spirit world to help her to define how this energy relates to her specific subject, or why it is that she would feel perhaps a move of tension toward a specific area, perhaps because, not necessarily that the colors turn violent, but because there is a certain barrier present that appears to be present, almost as though you are, how can I say this, observing a situation of where there had been a shift in tectonic plates, and you had seen that there was a specific rupture at a point, and you could see, or that rather that she determines then through the spirit sensitivity of her life, that this in fact is interpreted in a very specific way. It's actually very accurate.
Hmm. Well, that's good. That's great. And obviously, well, it's developing your sensitivity, and that is the way that it's working well for her. I mean, I don't suppose that's the sort of thing that you could teach other people, is it? Except to give them the tools to develop their sensitivity.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, so, and that's part of the point, really, friend.
It is
the individual that has to develop those senses and that sensitivity to be compassionate with people.
I mean, she seemed to be as shocked about being able to taste colour as anybody,
yes,
you know.
Yes,
this
quite
is what,
so.
You know, so it's not like...
Yes.
You go on. Okay.
No, I was just going to say, and that in itself is something of the conditioning of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, let us say then you take a bite of a peach. I never actually had one in my physical life. We didn't have peaches in those days. But I've tasted one since. And the colour of a peach is very apt. Even though when you take a bite of a peach, what's the first thing you think of? It's the colour of it.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Whereas
so.
Whereas an apple, you don't necessarily think of a specific colour.
No, exactly not. You actually think of, usually you think of pale white.
Yes, the inside.
Yes, or maybe possibly a very pale green. But not as sharp a green as you would a lime. But that's because you already have the intonation of the fixation of memory which has brought about the specific images that relate to the specific tastes. So that then relates to the colour and how your colour orientation then begins to bring about other subsequent consequences. So, let us go on then. If you then take another kind of fruit, shall we say, and that it's a plum, that because a plum is of a specific dark colour, you would naturally assess it as being this taste, and yet you find yourself actually quite at odds with then being presented with a plum that tastes completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because of its colour connotation that reflects to your memory, to your physical memory. It is to say that all of these situations, all of these rationales that you have that come upon you in your physical life journey are actually replicated in the spirit world. It's not something that you lose, but you actually keep those connotations, those relative states that you have enjoyed in your physical life, and you actually keep those in the spirit world because it's actually a part of your consciousness memory.
So if you wanted to, I know you said that you tried a peach in the spirit world.
Yes.
Not ever doing that in the physical world.
Yes.
Did it come in peach form Or did was it? How did you do that? And how would we do that in the spirit world?
Absolutely.
Does it have to be around? Does it have to be look like a peach for that to happen?
Yes,
do we have to bite it?
A very interesting thing. Yes. Friend, because of course this is all part of a physical journey, and how then can you possibly relate to something non-physical in the ether world in a physical way?
Yes.
Because of course you first of all have to understand that what you may well be doing in wishing to have this experience of, oh, what does a peach taste like, is that you merely move towards someone, you ask of someone, does anyone know of someone who's eaten a peach?
Okay.
And then you find that person and ask them to actually lend you a part of their memory.
Right, okay.
And so what you do is you bring that memory to yourself. It may still not strike a chord with you because it's their memory and not yours. So how can you possibly translate this memory of someone else into something being yours? Quite simply, what you then do is that in the spirit world, you ask of yourself of the condition of that family of fruit, or that condition of that family of wine or beer or whatever, whatever was made in that situation, whether it be man-made or something which came together as the juices and the particles of mutation that actually gravitated through the evolution of the Earth planet. You are then actually asking of that situation to be presented to you. Asking who? Asking what? You are asking of yourself, of the ether world. That's how things come to you.
So let's just hope that this chap, or whoever, lady, that had lent you their cellular memory knew what a good peach tasted like.
Oh, yes, absolutely so. but the point is, though, then, that what you can also do is you can go into the halls of learning and ask of a peach to relieve of itself so that you can actually experience that exquisite taste yourself.
Mm.
And how do you do that if you don't have a cellular body to do it with? Well, of course, in the ancient tradition of the spirit world, you can reanimate your spirit through your spirit body, the physical body that you had, in order to regurgitate those thoughts and memories of that situation. And therefore, if the peach is willing, it will allow you to eat it. It doesn't mean to say that it will be gone forever, because it is just for you to experience that revelation. That's why it is, in fact, that in the spirit world, we don't actually have to have a physical experience in order to experience what a physical experience is like.
Could we do that before we had a... We've only got a couple of minutes left.
Yes.
Could we do that before we had a physical life? Then
yes.
Experience that situation?
Absolutely so.
Even though we'd never had peace or anything else?
Yes, quite so.
To know what that would be like.
Quite so, because it is possible as a spirit being, a pure spirit being, to actually borrow the condition of someone else just for a short time. So as to have that experience and to understand what it is actually relative to. That doesn't mean to say that you can borrow other experiences necessarily to increase the suffering of someone else. It's always only a positive trait that you are able and allowed to create this pathway. And I say allowed, it's by your own volition. So it's not someone with a big stick saying, no, you can't do that. It's actually through your own volition of understanding and your vibration index that actually allows you to be able to converse with a specific fruit. Or whatever.
Or even...
It's to do with your intention, after all.
Absolutely, yes. Yes. Or even really be in the halls of learning in the first place.
Absolutely. Because not everyone can go there. It's really going to be a statement of how your vibration has become in your search for knowledge and truth, in your search for alignment with God or is, in a search for alignment with the passions, not just of the physical world, but of the ether world too.
Okay, well, that's been absolutely fascinating as usual, Gregory. Thank you very much.
God bless.
God bless. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd just like to mention our website again, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more information about us, our books and CDs, or you can book an Akashic reading with Gregory, and as well as BBS Radio on Mondays and Thursdays, we also have another radio show, which is Spirit Teaching on artistfirst.com on Tuesdays. My name is Sylvie Avery, and until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.